Workersradio.com.
You're listening to American Workers Radio, a national network promoting American-made products with your host, Michael Blihash.
Well, good morning and welcome again to another edition of American Workers Radio here on 860 AM, which, as you know, serves the entire Philadelphia and tri-state area. I'm asking all of you to go to your telephone, invite family and friends to tune in on the radio at 860. Now, if they live outside of Philadelphia in our tri-state area, they can listen live to the rebroadcast right now by going to the front page of AmericanWorkersRadio.com. If they decide, they can tune in any other time of the day, 24 hours a day, simply by going to the Listen to the Rebroadcast Anytime link, which is located on the left-hand side of the page. Now, if you received our email this morning, make sure you send it out to someone else and bring them into our fold of people concerned about changing America, because we really have to do it. We don't have any other national people helping us out. First, I want to acknowledge our great panel members, who include inventor Mark Andel, founder of the Made in America store, Dr. Larkin Connolly, East Coast Vice President of SCORE, Rich Logis, who is the principal of RJL Technology Integration, and our very competent engineer, Henry Chaplinsky. And according to the FCC regulations, I am Michael Blihash, your host, and in better voice today. And I hope that all of you that are, you know, going through a little bit of these seasonal allergies, whether it's from Christmas trees or whatever, make sure you take care of that voice, because a voice is, unbelievable when you're doing jobs like this. Well, this week, ladies and gentlemen, something very special happened. It happened to me. It happened to Larkin. It happened to Henry Chaplinsky. We all received something in the mail. It was unbelievable. We received a 100% Made in America Model A toaster. It's the Model A toaster made by our very own Mark Andel. Now, among Mark's many talents as a welder, as a businessman, he can now add to his list of accomplishments that in the 21st century, he has placed on the market a new Model A non-electrical toaster. It's unbelievable. Non-electric. Unbelievable. It reminds me of something that we had when I was in the Scouts. It's pre-electricity, Mark. Ben Franklin would be so pleased to shake your hands and say, Mark, the Model A toaster is wonderful. And I want to tell you, it was used, this type of a toaster was something that people used hundreds and hundreds of years ago. And when I got that toaster, we opened it up and immediately we went into the kitchen, put it on the stove. And by the way, not only did Mark send this toaster, this specialized toaster, he sent a loaf of bread with it, which was unbelievable. So there, I immediately said, let's go to the kitchen. We put it on the stove and we started to heat it up and we gorged ourselves with it. It was great. I enjoyed the bread so much, as did the members of the staff. We couldn't believe it. So I have the toaster sitting here in the studio, and I put your little American-made flag on it that you send me, and I'm gonna put it up as a conversation piece, because Mark, it demonstrates that everyone can make something if they put their mind to it. That's the bottom line. And we need a million Mark Andels in America inventing day-to-day items that we use. Can you imagine at this day and age, we are talking about needing to invent cell phones that are made in America, because everybody's invented all the lines and took all the properties and went elsewhere to make them. We invented these things in the USA. The toaster was invented you know, probably in Europe at some point where they put it under the, put it above the coals. We did that in the Scouts. You, when you went on an encampment, there was no electricity allowed. There was no propane, none of that stuff. So you did things like this. But when I saw that, I said, my God, this guy, he's unbelievable. And Mark, you did say many months ago that you were going to address this toaster issue. So this is the Model A toaster. And I think next, Mark, we're going to have to talk to some people in the new year. Maybe get those guys from Dream It, Do It. Maybe talk to Michael Marchetti and to Ray Vaccari. You know, the guys that were on the show, and Ian Trammell. And by the way, they wish everyone a very Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. And I'm going to make sure that they all know about this toaster. We're talking about getting together in the spring to do some sort of event. We've got to do something to change where we are. But I know that Rich received a toaster. Rich, how was your reaction to the toaster?
Well, hey, good morning, guys. And first off, Merry Christmas to all of our listeners. I have said Merry Christmas today to someone, and there was silence on the other line. And I said, hello? And guy gets on and says, annoyed. Well, I'm not Christian. I don't celebrate Merry. I don't celebrate Christmas. I said, well, happy pagan celebration December 25th day to you. Michael, everybody's devoted to something.
Right, right.
Not just for religious people. Everyone's devoted. You're lazy? You're devoted to laziness. Well, lazy is not what Mark is. Mark, first off, my wife is the handy one in the family. I am so publicly embarrassed to say that, but the truth is the truth. And what I explained to her, she knows about this sort of running joke that's going on, because it's only recently that I've allowed her to listen to the show, because I didn't want her to know how crazy I really was until, like, after 7 or so years of marriage. It makes it harder to, you know, separate at this point. So now she listens to the show regularly. And she said, you built this? And I said, yeah, he did it. You know, we've been talking about this, and Larkin's been talking about it. And I made mention, guys, how, you know, we've had Mike Sessions on the show, and he's working out. So, Mark, I see maybe a cooperative effort here. And I just have to say about all of this, it is, you know, it makes me, you know, people use the word proud a lot and they throw that word around. I really am, as I look back 3 years now, Michael, on this show, this show and you guys have served as a great source of inspiration. I think not just for me, but for our listeners and all those who have been introduced to this show. So, you know, Mark, you went and you did it. And we still have to always recognize that, you know, it's like this commercial that's on TV about people who do it, Michael, you know, the doers. And we always got to be talking about that. And, Mark, you know, you went and did it, and thank you so much for that gift. It just serves as a reminder that if you want to do something badly enough, you'll figure out a way to do it. So thank you for that.
Mark, it was great. Now, Larkin, I got your text with your picture with the toaster on your stove. What was your reaction when you received the toaster?
Well, I got an early hint by accident, so I wasn't overwhelmed. When I opened it and saw what it was, I truly was surprised. I was not overly surprised, because I knew that the chore of creating the first toaster made in America was given to Mark, and Mark responds to challenges like that. I think we've seen that for 3 years. There's a couple comments I'll make. First of all, I went through the loaf of Italian bread that he sent with it. And I went through 2 dozen eggs, because I have a hard time eating toast without a fried egg. I've gained six pounds, and I've done that with a smile on my face. But I also make another one. The toaster cost me about $3,800, because we, unfortunately, in the state of Florida, are cursed with nothing but electric stoves. And I know that toaster will work better on a gas stove, but unfortunately so does my wife, who has wanted a gas stove since the day we moved here. So now, Mark, I am out stopping for a gas stove, and I guess I'm going to have to go to Georgia because she won't have a gas stove in the house. It isn't made in America.
Your wife called me a month ago.
So I know those bad boys are about $3,800, but I'm prepared to put one in. I don't know what to tell you. I smiled from the time I opened that package until the end of the day. I mean, we had beef stew, and she said, "Do you want a ciabatta or a hard roll?" And I said, "No, I want a piece of toast." And she went, "Uh-oh."
You know, Larkin, and your face said it all with that picture, guys. You know, Mike.
We fired up the.
We made you famous with that picture. The face said it all. And, you know, last year, of course, we want an item. We want a toaster with a plug on it eventually. But as I was thinking, I didn't want to let you down. So, you know, when I was growing up, I went to my friend's A-frame cottage when I was probably 10, 12 years old. But they used to have something similar that you put on, and I forgot about it, but I'm thinking, geez, I can pull this off. And, you know, I love you guys getting it. Of course, Henry got it first, and Henry, I was going to tell you, scrape that sticker off the top. I stuck that on at the end. That's why we TIG welded one on the bottom. But my good friend and weld manager, Dale Fleming, put a lot into that with me, too. We kind of kept it top secret behind it because they're always curious what we're working on, you know. But I'm glad you guys enjoyed it. They're stainless steel 304. They'll last you forever. If anything, it's a conversation piece, you know. But good stuff. I'm glad you enjoyed them.
Well, I have all of my state managers coming to Philadelphia the 12th, 13th, and 14th, and we will be at the Polish-American Cultural Center. Michael Blihosz, as usual, has opened his heart and his arms and has welcoming us to have our meeting there. And I said, this has got to be one of the subjects that I talk about.
Larkin, it's going to be in the conference room where you will have all of your guests along with the specialty requests, the TV, the whole deal.
Yeah. So
I have it sitting here. I'm looking at it as we speak.
I said to my wife, how the hell am I going to get this to Philly? I mean, it probably cost Mark, you know, half a week's wages to get it down here. And then it dawned on me. Last night I was lying in bed and I went, I got it. And she said, what? And I said, I know how I'll get the test. She went, oh, boy. You woke me up and told me. I said, I think there's one up in Philadelphia already. But
yeah,
we're going to talk
through,
about it.
I didn't run that through the front door. I ran that through the back door, all that making that. But that stainless, once you get it warm, will stay warm for a couple of days. Just takes a little while to get it heated. But you're right, Larkin, with a gas stove, much better, I believe.
Yeah, much better. And so
I didn't mean to make you have to go out to make that major purchase. Yeah.
Well, that's okay. My wife is absolutely delighted you're now her best friend. She just doesn't know how to cook on electric. She hates every time something flubs, she says, that cotton picking stove.
You know, guys, just listening to everybody talk about this accomplishment just reminds me of how winning is a cure for a host of ills. And that's, Mark, what you did. You brought about something special. You got us all together talking about it. And there's another opportunity for people in businesses like selling appliances and all to say, well, why can't I get a 100% made in America toaster? I'll take on the responsibility of making it, and then I'll give it to places like Mark to sell it. I don't understand why there's no invention left in a lot of America's people.
You know, Mike, as I talk to people lately, I used to say I don't have nothing that has a battery in it or electronic in my store. Out of 7,000 products I bring up now, I don't have one with a plug on it. They said, what do you mean? I don't have one with a cord. Are you kidding me? In the United States. That opens more people's eyes, and that's what we're about, raising awareness, our whole team here. But you're right, though. Just, you know, Larkin, I wanted you to receive it first. And when Henry sent me, I'm like, oh, I never thought about it. You know, who's going to get it first? And it was kind of neat as it's all happening. Then I was hoping they all made it, and they were right address, and they didn't get lost or borrowed by somebody along the way once they figured, well, they could probably scrap it and get a couple bucks, you know. But so I'm glad it all worked out. It is a conversation piece. It does show you we could build anything, and if you wanted to do volume on them guys, maybe that'll become a product of the Made in America store down the road. We'll have to lighten up a little bit.
You know,
I said to my, my wife got home, she said, "What's that box out in the front porch?" I said, "Yeah, get the two-wheel dolly and come on around. We're moving in the house."
Nothing Mark Handel makes is light, by the way. My friends will tell you that.
Oh, that's great.
You know, guys, during this very special time of year, as we're going to be celebrating with our family and friends, it's really a great time for us to discuss issues like this, because there might be an inventor amongst us who would want to, you know, get involved in some way to make things. So many businesses that I talk to say, you know, these have been rough times. Some tell me that, you know, the internet has taken away some of their customers. And they say, so I'm looking to put in some specialty products and things like that. I say, well, if you can focus on some American made, there is an audience of people looking for that. Put a little sign in your window that says a lot of our products are made in America. We have to do those kinds of things as a public relations thing. It's something Mark brought to my mind as I saw this thing. I said, if we're going to get Americans back into the workplace and get businesses back over here, we have to get people united behind all kinds of efforts that are going to invent America, the place of all invention.
You know, Mike, it was actually fun. You know, it's funny, we're so serious, we get serious on a radio show sometimes, we get off track, off trail. But it was actually fun. I was like a little kid putting them in my room and getting them in the box, you know. So it's kind of fun to invent is a point. And Larkin, you know, kids in schools, and I'm looking for model builders and things that were lost. I mean, I don't hear of people when I'm hiring them, hey, did you build models? Did you build Estes rockets? Did you do any of these things? This is fun stuff, and I think we got to get it back in. But inventing is fun. A lot of times when we say America got back to just they're greedy, you know, you got to go back to making something is pretty neat. A lot of fun, pretty cool to say, hey, we made that. So that's something we got to bring back in our school systems.
You're right, Mark. And you know, I have to add this. You know, when I go to these job fairs and all, people tell me, you know, and I look at the person's resume, a resume tells 1,000 stories about a person. If a person shows that they have talents, that's wonderful. But they also put on what kind of involvements they have. That makes the person really, you know, be singled out for what they do, not just a bump on a log, but somebody who's involved in community, inventing, you know, scouting, whatever they are doing, they're doing something besides being just a regular qualified person. That is what America's employers are looking for now, because you can find 1,000 employees, but somebody who's going to want to join you to move your business up the ranks is really not that easy to find these days.
Mike, imagine getting a handwritten resume, or, you know, it's funny, when you get something in your hand, you can feel it. Like if you get a handwritten letter these days, Mike, I might get one or two out of 100 or 200. But when it's handwritten, there's a whole different feel than the electronic world. So there's a lot to be said about that, even getting a Christmas card or something that's handwritten. Somebody took the care to build something, make something, give you something that actually took time instead of just processed. A big difference, you know, and that's something we lost.
And we did lose it. And I say to everyone, whether you're self-employed, you work for a small business or a major corporation, the real key to America's change and our future success is to have America's consumers go out and look for the products that they need, not just buy it because it's American made, but look for the products they need that are made in America. And that's where the people are getting the message. We've let our country go. It flew away right before our eyes. It sounds almost unbelievable to people that we've reached a point that we're struggling just to talk about a 50% goal of whatever is sold in America being made in America. Most of the people didn't look at the labels, weren't concerned 10 years ago because most people had some level of jobs. But now as we're losing our 10,000 people a day are retiring, we're losing the skills, it's just another excuse for merchandisers to take the products and make them in another country.
Well, there are a lot of reasons for that. And, turning the tide is going to be the important part. It's proof of concept and getting everybody to understand that we can bring it back to this country. is where we are. It's not going to, you know, we all know that it's not going to happen overnight, that it's going to take a heck of a lot longer to get all of our products back than it took us to get them over there. It really will, because we've got to rebuild our entire infrastructure, and this is where Mark can probably do most of his really stellar work, is once the country realizes that, they're going to need somebody to spiritually lead them back to, yes, we can, and here's how it can happen. So it's important, and there's hardly anybody that can lead that that march back to creating our own factories as well as Mark can. He's proven it can be done.
You know, when we had Ray Vaccari was on the broadcast, and Michael Marchetti from the Do It Dream It, they made it very clear that today's manufacturing is clean. It's distinguished. You really have a lot to be proud of that you're doing. And I mean, over 30 years ago, people thought it was just the standing on the line, and I don't want to do that anymore or whatever. And now we see that all the new modern industries are really very well put together, and they're not the type of places that, you know, were horrified. And we needed all sorts of people to represent the people in the industries, the workers, because the conditions were so bad. That's not the way modern industries are. Some are in foreign countries because they don't care. They have child labor or whatever. But in America, our industries are very well done. We just have to get more of them back. We have to make a full turnaround during 2016. And by the way, talking about 2016, we're coming up on another election. I know that we had a debate on Saturday night, which I listened to the debate quite closely. And I wanted to know if there was much going to be said about America's economy and jobs and everything else. And unfortunately, again, no matter what they're talking about in foreign policy and what we're going to do with ISIS and everything else, everything I believe should be focused upon what are we going to do for America and Americans. Do you agree?
Absolutely. I want to bring up
Saturday,
one thing,
Michael.
Go ahead.
There was a debate Saturday? Oh, you mean the last debate that was on a Saturday?
Yeah. No, there was.
And I'm being facetious, which you really pronounce facetious. I want to say one point about that, Michael. I do want to challenge a little bit those who say, well, they put it on, I know that some of the candidates are saying this. Well, they put it on a Saturday night. No one's going to watch. Just because you might not watch it live doesn't give you an excuse not to watch it. DVR, baby.
That's how I watched it. I didn't see it live. I mean, I saw it live on DVR through a...
But, of course, we know why it's on a Saturday. But don't let them off, we shouldn't let people off the hook quite that easily to just say, well, it was on a Saturday. I didn't watch it.
You know,
all over the Internet. You can
Larkin,
watch it anywhere.
This season of the year, I'm out and about at several events. And everyone who listened in a few weeks ago, when we talked about independent voters not being able to come up and vote in the primaries, this is an issue that should be addressed. Because as we have so many of these campaigns to register to vote and all, many of the people have been registering as independents because, number one, they don't want to be identified by any particular party. Oh, you're this or you're that. You're an independent. I also learned something that if you are a particular party, they do take your records and they will give you some robocalls to say to you, we know that it's important. You're going to come out in the primary election to help us with this one or that one. Where an independent, they do not send those people those robocalls. So people are getting very wise to all these things. But people were saying to me, how did it come about that an independent cannot vote in the primary? Can you answer that, Larkin? I know you're involved in the political end of things.
Well, it's a two-party system.
But
if you don't have a primary to decide for the Republicans and the Democrats and the Libertarians and the Green Party, whoever is out there, to decide who's going to run for their party in the final election. It just extends the choice, your opportunity to pick the individual that you want. If we could cross lines, it would be like having a general election in Florida. I mean, everybody votes for everybody. It turns into a popularity contest. And I think the idea behind having primaries is to lengthen the process of choosing, of lengthening the process to hear the different debates and find out who it is that you want. I will tell you this. When Hillary ran against Barack Obama in 04, I guess it was, 04, 08?
08.
08. I had a tremendous number of Republicans in my ward change to Democrats so that they could vote for Hillary in the primary. And, of course, I spent the next 3 years chasing them to try to get them to come back.
Very interesting. Now, if they were registered independent and they were allowed to go in for the Green Party, the Constitution Party, the Republican Party, or the Democratic, it would become a popularity contest. And I don't know if that's such a bad idea.
Well, I mean, I don't have a problem with independents being able to elect at the curtain, as we call it, at the voting booth, to turn to the judge of elections and say, I want to vote Republican, and then go in there and make selections on the Republican side. As an independent, you get to go both ways. But I guess what would happen? Can anybody suggest? Everybody would turn independent so that they had that flexibility. So I don't know. Rich is the one that can probably write a book on the subject.
All right, Rich, because this is something wherever I go, people bring it up. Say, you know, Michael, I registered independent 4 years ago, but I would like to go out and vote, but do I have to go through this whole thing to re-register and all to vote for this person? And I said, well, that's a good point. I will bring it up on the broadcast and see what the guys think. What do you think about that, Rich?
There's no perfect answer on this, Michael. At the risk of contradicting myself, you know, you asked me once on air a few months ago as an independent, because I am an independent. My voter registration says NPA, means no party affiliation, if I should be able to go and vote in the primary. And I just kind of knee-jerk reaction said, yeah, sure, you know. So at the risk of contradicting myself, I think that, Larkin, what you're saying about those who want to, if someone wants to change a registration, Michael, let's say someone's an independent, Democrat, Republican, whatever the case may be, Libertarian Party, they want to change because they feel strongly about a candidate in a party, especially a major party. The good news is that that voter can change his or her registration with relative ease. And you have to show up, you have to do it, confirm who you are. So as an independent, me and Larkin are in a closed primary state. And I'm working as a poll worker for the elections coming up next year.
Oh, you are?
And yes, I'm working as a poll worker. We're going to go through all the training about who's permitted to vote when and how, general election primaries. So the thing, Michael, is this is one of these issues. I think both there are really good points on both sides. And while I don't want to be noncommittal on this, as an independent, in my state, I get locked out. If I don't want to be locked out, I can change my registration. Now, changing a registration doesn't make someone necessarily partisan. If someone wants to register from independent to Republican because he or she wants to vote for one of the candidates now, I'm not going to, in my way, have a knee-jerk reaction and say, oh, you're a registered Republican, you're a registered Democrat, therefore you're partisan. No, I'm not going to make that judgment. That's the kind of judgment that's made all too often in our partisan two major party politics. So I just live with it, Michael. You
now,
know,
here's a question, Rich.
If I want to go in the primary, if I want to go and vote in the primary for someone, I can change my registration. The state does allow for that. So it's not perfect, but the avenue is there for me to participate if I want.
Larkin, do you know of any states that allow independents to vote in the primary?
Oh, I know. There are several. I'd have to do some fact checking, but I can tell you there's more than probably four or five states in the country that have completely open primaries.
Well, see, I like that. The more I talk to people and the more I hear what they're saying, I mean, they said that they don't like being segregated like this. And that's part of the reason the people have walked away from the political process, because they don't want to be this or that. They want to be independent. So I think this is an issue that's going to have to be addressed.
The primaries can be summed up in one word. It's momentum. It's about momentum. You're creating momentum. All you're doing is you're getting people to see who's got a chance to win, because nobody wants to vote for the guy who lost or who they think is going to lose. And independents aren't allowed to be in the primaries because they're afraid if they gain momentum, then they have a shot to win. So we'll block them out. Rich's point has never been more true than through this.
That's right, Henry. It's Henry's opinion is well understood. You take Nick Triano. He was a perfect example. A very qualified person, well-spoken, well-presented. And yet, people on the other side, be they Democrats or Republicans, were not able to go into the booth and say, I want Nick. I think it's something we have to look at.
Well, that's ballot access, Michael. You have to remember with Nick, which I don't, for as long as I will be on this show, which God willing is going to be many, many years, I'm going to use the word never. I will never be convinced and persuaded to agree that someone who wishes to run as an independent should have to get more signatures.
No, it's ridiculous. It is ridiculous.
I'll never be convinced of that.
And, you know, I did speak to one of the elected representatives, and he said the same thing that Henry just said. They try to keep people away. You know what I'm saying? Why? Because it's all about dollars. If you have three parties, that means you have possibility of three people asking for money. If you have four parties, you have four people asking for money. A dollar is a dollar. It's not a dollar and a quarter or a dollar and a half. So they don't want people accessing the big pots. If you can run around, chase yourself in a circular manner all you want, you're not going to be able to get that dollar, because people will say, well, you have no chance to win. But if you allow everybody to go in the poll, you are really doing a popularity contest, and you are allowing the American system to work. I mean, we were founded as a republic, but we were never founded as a republic for only two parties. Is that correct, Larkin?
Pretty much. I mean, we started out with Federalists and, you know, a myriad different parties. So, no, we were not found on that tenet.
So how did we whittle this down to a two-party system is my question. I'm only bringing it up today because people ask me, and I'm really not that knowledgeable about it.
Well, I suggest that somebody go out and do some research and some work and figure it out. You know, it's somewhat like me posing, or us as a program, posing the question, when will someone in Congress go in and change the remuneration for congressmen and senators so that they have to live with the same benefits package that we do? Well, I got news for you. Never is the answer to that. Why would they? They'd be cutting their own nose off, you know, to spite their face. That's just...
But see, Larkin, you're exactly right. And by the way, if the people had three or four possibilities, those people will no longer think that they're the king of the road. They're the king of the road right now. They can do anything they choose and decide not to vote on something because it's going to knock me out of the box sooner or later. But if you had four people or five parties, I'm only talking about many of the European countries. When they tell me they come to America, they come to the historic district and they say, two-party system in America has just, you know, narrowed your possibilities. In Poland, say, they have 30 parties, and it's the smaller parties. Many of them are the Workers' Party, the Miners' Party, the Shipbuilders' Party. It's all these different parties that they have. And they all come to the table, and everybody has an opinion. In America, you have two people at the table. There's no one guaranteed to have to stay at the table. this one doesn't like something, we walk out of the room, the caucus is with one side only. If you had four people in the room, it would be different. If you had independents, that's another thing, Rich, you've been talking about. Independents have a hard time. If they had full ballot access in the primaries and in the general election, you would see a whole change happen in this country. That's my point of view.
Just well, as my compliments went to Nick Troiano for the fact that he and his campaign worked to get into the debates. You see, guys, to me, it's always the foundation of all of this is always that the person, the candidate who has a chance of winning. Nick Troiano was on the ballot. I don't care that his opponents raised more money. I don't care that one of his opponents was an incumbent. Getting on a ballot meant that he had a chance to win the election. And he got into the debates. Okay, he got in. And I can go back.
And, Rich, I'm going to just say
I
this.
I can go back, Michael.
You're right.
Back.
And he one was the in the debates. He was in the debates. Now, if there were Democrats and Republicans sitting in the audience, they could not go into the booth and vote for him, even though they liked what he had to say. They had to go in as independents and vote for him.
But they, but Michael, but don't forget, it was a national office election, and in that sense, a general election. So independent or not, they could have cast their vote for Nick Troiano, and Nick did get a lot of votes. So the issue is, I mean, I can go back to one of the one election that makes Democrats so angry still to this day. They're still not over that fake outrage. You could go back to Ralph Nader in the year 2000. Ralph Nader had a chance because of his ballot access to obtain the required 270 electoral votes. What did the two parties and their voters say? Oh, he has no chance to win. He has no chance to win. He can't get in. And that's exactly why, Michael, and I'll go further back in history, Ross Perot scared the crap out of the two parties. Because when he got into the debate in 1992, first off, I hate to use this word cost, but I'm going to use it for lack of a better term here. He cost President George H.W. Bush re-election.
Yeah, he did.
He took the votes right from George H.W. Bush. Not so much from Clinton. He took them from Bush, Michael. So after that happened, the two parties said, whoa. The guy got into the debate, had his famous, remember when Perot did that? He said, hear that sound? That was his jobs going to Mexico. Yeah, once he got into the debates, Michael, he didn't win any electoral votes, but damn it, he got a lot of votes in that 92 election. And after that point, the two parties got together and said, we can't have this. Because eventually what will happen, Michael, in their minds, 10 years from now, 20 years from now, an alternative third-party guy might get on the stage, woman might get on the stage and actually win this thing.
Well, I'd like to see is somebody put on the ballot, should we allow all independents to be on the primary ballot as well? I think that it would keep more people involved in the political system, knowing that it's very important that they go out and vote both times in the primary and in the general election. And by the way, guys, and for everyone who was listening and told me about what they saw on Saturday night when I saw people on Sunday, millions of people saw the Republican and the Democratic debates. And I would like to see, Mark, a candidate for president that's going to look at what you do, what you did, what you have accomplished, and put that in their lingo when they're going out. They're talking with vim and vigor how they are going to fight ISIS, what they're going to do. Not one of them said what they're going to try to do to bring 40 or 50 million jobs back to America, how they're going to change the federal tax law, how they're going to bring in some enterprise zones in every zip code across America. We talk about it on a program like this. They talk about nothing. They're worrying about who did this, who said that. This is not what these debates are supposed to be about.
Now, Michael, did any of our guys, did you see the 60-minute special on Tim Cook and Apple Sunday night?
No, I did not. I was out.
You know, it's worthwhile to look it back up, Rich and Larkin. You'll like it. But Tim Cook was on. They interviewed him. They're very top secret. He even joked they were more secret than the CIA. But here's a company, you know, Apple, we got our iPhones. Rich, you'd be right in line with this electronics, and it's a way of the future. This company has got 1 million-plus jobs, Foxconn. in China. 1 million manufacturing jobs are over there. They interviewed Tim Cook. I actually like the company, the ingenuity, and they stay on the cutting edge. It's incredible. But then he started to talk to, you know, about paying taxes here. He said, you know, and that's a big debate and challenge he's got in Washington. And then he talked about, you know, how much they pay in Ireland, the money. But he talked about that 1 million-plus jobs over there manufacturing. You know, and I'm thinking, Apple, come on, you've got the money. He's building a huge, beautiful headquarters, I believe, in California. It's incredible. The technology they're putting into it. It's worth to look that up, too. But, you know, Apple itself, if you really loved America, they got plenty of profit to really go after creating the skilled jobs that he says he can't find, creating the trail, Larkin, that you know we need, this supply chain. He could make that change, but yet they decide to keep it in China, the manufacturing, hide the money in Ireland. And it's just incredible when I watched that. Really, it made me think of Apple. You know, you really don't quite get it. Great company, but you don't get it. You should bring some more manufacturing back here. You've got the money to actually make change.
And you know, Mark, the biggest problem that we have with this issue is if we said to the people right now, don't buy Apple because they're mainly located in China, who's the alternative that we send them to that's made in America? That's the problem.
Yeah. Well, yeah,
that's the problem. You know, I'm walking with this old phone. I'm still walking, and people say to me, oh, I can't believe it still works. It's 7 years old, and it works perfect. I get everything and everything that I need, but it is mainly made in America. And my first phone, by the way, which was probably in the 90 or so, was a StarTAC made in by Texas Instrument in Texas. Now, can anybody tell me why they decided that we don't want to make them in Texas anymore, but we'll decide to make them in Japan and all these other places? Why?
You know, on this special, he really touched on why, you know, paying the 30, 40, 42% taxes, state and federal, things like that. But his big push, Mike, was he was saying he can't find people to work with his hands here, which, I, you know, we all know. We talk about it every day. This is really worthwhile, guys, to go back and watch this interview.
Mark, if you can designate that, if you can send me the link, I will try to email it to all of our people so they know exactly what's what. The problem is, in 30 years, where has our school system gone as far as creating the latest technology in the trades, industrial arts, and everything like that? They haven't. They pulled them out of the schools. You heard what Ray Vaccari said from the New Jersey Advanced Manufacturing Technical Team. He said that they took it out because that was going to be passé, manufacturing, ingenuity. Why work when you can lay? Why lay when you can, you know, float around? It's all these crazy ideas that people had. Why drive when you can have somebody drive you? America became a place like a wasteland. Here we have 1 million people graduating a year, and probably a small percentage of them really have the abilities to go and join the industries that America needs so badly. It's true. In fact, there was a man, his name is Jerry Galinsky. He was just on KYW News in Philadelphia last Saturday. And he said, right now, you can go and there are 2 million jobs in technology unfilled in America that could be filled immediately. They don't have the qualified people. We have all these schools getting all this money, and yet people are graduating with a piece of paper and nowhere to go.
You know, Mike, why can't people, the government, the president, these even in the debates, why can't they say go out and buy Made in America? Because everyone better take it serious. It's our ticket. It's our top disconnect in the country. We've got to build more product, and we all agree it's going to take time. But why can't the Tim Cooks build more here? Why can't, you know, anyone say go out and buy Made in America products at least 50% for Christmas? Wow. I mean, that would be that simple to grow our economy. Just,
you know, like Mark, like Alan Dom said on this broadcast, he's going to go after businesses to come to Philadelphia. Why can't Hillary Clinton and all the others running maybe ask Marco Rubio to be more concerned about bringing jobs back, and Cruz and Trump? Why can't they speak up and say, I'm going after Tim Cook, and I want to know if he's going to bring 50% of those jobs back by the year 2017. And if he is, we'll help him out. If he's not, we want to know why not.
Yeah, you know, my team did. We asked a question. We did it. We brought 7,000 products, and we're growing them companies. They thanked me. I just wrote a pile of checks, $880,000 in checks to these companies. You can do it. You've got to want to do it. You've got to love your country, and you've got to believe in it. So they can do it. And I think we've got to get to that point next year. We've got to make sure that they should have this debate we're talking right now.
That's right. And, in fact, go ahead, Larkin.
Well, I mean, we are in a very unique position. And if I think, and somebody in banking that understands it a little bit better than I do, I worry that if we do create any kind of ultimatum, that a small country over in Asia called China is going to challenge us and say, okay, if that's the way you want to play, and they're going to start calling notes. And we owe China a lot of money.
You're right, Larkin, but something I have to say, it will help clarify a lot of this stuff. And here is the problem. Merchandisers come to our big stores, the Targets, the Kmarts, and whatever, and they say, we can sell you this particular pen for $10. And an American guy comes in and says, well, we can sell it to you for $10 too. The guy who's from foreign comes in and he says, well, we'll sell it to you for $8. Then the American guy has to come in and say, well, we'll sell it to you for $7.50. And what's happening, the cost of operating in America with the taxes and all of the good things that we offer people, like health care and unemployment compensation, insurance and all, those things cost money. Items coming from afar don't cost that. All that's done. And the federal taxes and all are on our people in the USA. I really believe what Rich said some time ago, and Larkin, you said the same thing, and you too, Mark, we should have zero federal income tax for the next 5 years as far as companies coming back from overseas. They charge them no money on what they've taken overseas. Bring it back and let's start from scratch with a higher rate. More people working, more money in the system, more people happy. You know yourself, Mark. You're a man who's busy. You're a happy person.
Mike, you know, I just read in the paper we pay maybe 0 to 1% on imports coming in. We've got to pay the exports 6 to 15%. I mean, right away, that's not a fair trade act, right? It was a whole, it's just out of whack. There's no common sense there.
You know, and when they were talking, Jennifer, I believe she was on, we have to get her on in the new year. She said that they were trying to take away the label where it was made in America or this or that to make it like a blank product.
It was an unfair advantage.
Unfair advantage. Come on. I mean, somebody told me that. I want to tell you, Northeast Philadelphia, this guy's a pretty regular listener.
Rich needs an unfair advantage.
Oh, God. He said to me, well, then, Michael, then tell the people that we have our own advantage. The hell with this World Trade Organization. So we don't have to send our stuff. How much of our stuff made in the USA is being sent overseas right now? Not that much. Not in the way of clothing. In fact, Larkin, if you went to the football stadium and you stood at the door and looked at the labels of all the quality sportswear and all the fan wear that people are wearing, very few, if any, are made in America.
You remember the start of the movie when they break down the baseball game.
That's right. That's exactly right. And this is where there's nobody in America. I think our question to the politicians, and it has to be everybody shaking the tree all at once, is what are you doing for America? We heard what you're going to do for ISIS and what you're going to do with this one and how much aid we're going to provide here and we're going to bring in all these refugees and all. What are we doing for America? What are we doing for my kids, my grandkids, Larkin, your grandkids? What's the story going to be for 10 years from now, 15 years from now? Henry has 4 kids. What are they going to do?
Well, I think you're oversimplifying, and B, you're oversimplifying the answer, and A is it. We have to understand that we live in a world economy. That's the case right now. It's not us against the world. It's a world economy. And we've got to learn how to survive inside that world economy. But to your credit, you're 100% right. Functioning inside that world economy means that we get our fair share of what's being manufactured. And that's what the next president or any president needs to, you know, we have to stop these trade agreements that are so lopsided and one-sided and recognize that in order for this country to become great again, we're going to have to start manufacturing items, period, amen.
Right. And right now, you're right, Larkin.
And Larkin could have toast now in case there is no power in the future. So
yes.
Larkin,
you can start a little fire in the backyard, you know, and put that. At least you know there's toast that you can have.
Well, you don't need
Larkin, did I just hear you say that we've got to work to make America great again?
I have to what?
Did I just hear you say that we need to work to make America great again?
Yes. Yeah, well, you clearly did. Oh, you clearly.
Yeah. Huh?
I'm not the slightest bit embarrassed about making that assessment right now. Yes, we
trade
have to
deals?
Work to make this country great again.
Hard work produces luck.
Larkin, winning is always something that we all work toward. You get up in the morning, you want to go out and earn your daily bread and, you know, make sure your life is cheerful. You see people, you're cheerful. You know, we've taken that cheerfulness, that ability to make money. That is part of the reason. And in person in social work, social services, I can tell you without question, a lot of the social ills in America are as a result of people not having jobs and job skills.
Mike, you want enthusiasm, right?
I got news for you. The collapse of the American family.
But that's also, even if there's a collapse of the family, a lot of that is due to the fact that a parent could not go out and earn a living. They had to show their children that they're on some sort of public support. They weren't offered talents. They don't have a talent to offer. These are the problems. And as we talk about this at this Christmas holiday, I think we have to talk at the table. These are bread and butter issues, not referring to Mark's toaster, but these are bread and butter issues that we're talking about, the heart and soul and the future of America. When you're at your Christmas gatherings and your New Year's celebrations, talk about America. Larkin, if there were items available in our stores, we could direct people to those items. I go shopping and look around. I'm still disappointed. It's getting a little better, but I'm still disappointed at the number of foreign products that flood America stores.
Well, you're 100% right. You're 100%
Michael.
Right. And it's not going to get any better until we address the issue.
We are the people that have to do it. Gentlemen, I have to pause, and then I'm going to ask you for some closing remarks. I'll tell you, I enjoyed today's conversation. It's something that should be done by our candidates. This is the type of conversations they should be having on the stage, telling each other what they're going to do to bring back industries to America, or at least bring back 50% of the industries that are making stuff in foreign lands, but bring a portion of their production here to the USA. I want to say thank you and holiday greetings. Wesołych Świąt, Merry Christmas, Happy New Year from Polka Deli, from the Polish American Travel Service, from Giorgio Foods, from Washington Savings Bank and Martin Bednarek, President, Yolanda Konopacka DeCipio, State Farm Insurance, Dr. Włodzimierz Zinn, Mr. Frank Spula, and members of the Polish National Alliance. And best wishes also from Mr. Leon Mankowski, attorney at law, from Mr. Chester Kshanovsky of Serena's Auto Body Shop, and everyone from the two Philadelphia net cost markets, and Mr. Joseph Drobot from the PRCUA, along with Michael Steinman, attorney, and Dr. Eva Maczak, dentist, well-known dentist, and Dominik Rostocki. Wish all of you Wesołych Świąt, have a happy and healthy holiday and a great new year. Also, best wishes from the Polish and Slavic Federal Credit Union and the Sugar House Casino. They invite you to stop by, open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, located at 1001 North Delaware Avenue in Philadelphia. And don't forget, people, I know that most of you have already done your Christmas shopping, but don't forget Mark Andel, founder of the Model A Toaster, which is sitting here in the studio. You can check out what he has to offer, and hopefully next year he'll be able to offer another 500 items, some of them hopefully with batteries and plugs. But check him out on the internet by going to madeinamericastore.com. I can't believe it. It's 11:54 already. Mark, as we come close to Christmas, I want to ask you for some Christmas greetings to our listeners.
All right. Mike, Rich and Larkin and Henry, I want to wish you both a Merry Christmas. Thank you for allowing me to be on the show. And to our listeners, my customers and team and family, again, Merry Christmas to all. Thank you. I truly, out in this holiday at all our stores, we just had our All-American Christmas event last weekend. I heard so many thank yous, and thank you for serving our country and doing what we do. So I want to thank everybody else and wish them a Merry Christmas.
Thank you so much, Mark, for your help. You have no idea how much I appreciate all that you're doing to help this campaign. All of us working together are going to make change happen. Larkin, your Christmas wishes.
I would, first of all, like to issue a warning, because this is going to be not only a different Christmas than how warm it is, but remember, the Christmas holiday is the number one time in our lives, Christmas time, that we get our relatives, our family together, and there's usually a lot of alcohol. But let me issue a warning here. There's also going to be a full moon. So
man. Thank you for reminding of us, Marlar.
It's going to be a wild Christmas for everybody. I wish everybody.
That's no reflection on Rich, is it? Rich, your Christmas greeting.
Oh, that's what I say. Larkin. I mean, that's what I'll say to it. Me and my wife are ready. Thank you to you guys, to all of our listeners, all the supporters of this show. And, yeah, Larkin, I do think that we are a great country. We can make greater. I will make mention, Larkin, that in case you're not aware, there is a certain candidate leading in his party's polls who has that as a slogan. Just, I wasn't sure if you were aware of that. You'll be able to find that out. President Clinton and Reagan also said the same thing when they were campaigning as well. So I'm confident, guys, we're going to come out on top of it, but it's going to test everyone's mettle. It's going to require a greater effort that I think we may even realize, but because of all what you guys do and the support of our listeners, thanks everyone.
Thank you so much, guys, and I'm going to ask all of you to at some point go to our site, American Workers Radio, and check out all of the links. There are a lot of information to share and a lot of information to absorb. In behalf of all of us in the Blihash family and all of us here at WWDB, American Workers Radio, and the Polish American Radio Network, heard 7 days a week here on 860, I want to wish you and yours the very best. As we say in the Polish language, Wesoły Świąt Bożego Narodzenia, which simply means Merry Christmas, best wishes to you and yours. We'll be looking forward to seeing you next Wednesday at 11 here on 860. Check us out on the internet anytime by going to AmericanWorkersRadio.com.
Merry Christmas, guys.
Merry Christmas,
everybody.